This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world. Today on Dreamland, we're going to be discussing one of the most serious, strangest, and extraordinarily important topics that we have ever discussed. If you're listening to the free Dreamland feed, then you'll be hearing this brief announcement. There will be no commercial interruptions during this special program, but I urge you as never before to go to unknowncountry.com and support us. Subscribe to Unknown Country. Remember, the internet is now a form of real estate. It is not free. If you don't help me pay for it, eventually it's going to go down and we'll end up in a much different situation with Unknown Country and Dreamland, and I would hate to see that happen. And not only that, it's fun and exciting and extraordinary to be a member of this community because you get to listen to things and find out information that is literally nowhere else in the world. There are 10 years of extraordinary interviews on this website for you to go through. They will change your mind and your life and open things up for you in ways that you never dreamed possible. It is the single richest subscriber area of its kind anywhere in the world, in my opinion, or frankly, than has ever been anywhere. So support it. Go to unknowncountry.com now and get started. I'm hoping to see lots of new subscribers over this weekend. And think of it, next week, if you're a subscriber, you don't have to listen to me jabbering about this. Now let's go on with the show. We've touched on it a few times before over the years, but today Linda Moulton Howe has a major new report on hybrids, and we will go on to discuss this in depth after her report. Linda Moulton Howe is one reporter who loves mysteries. She's radio's leading science journalist. She is an Emmy Award-winning TV producer, documentary filmmaker, and the reporter and editor for EarthFiles.com, the internet's most respected edge science website. Today, we are going to be talking about hybrids, and folks, hold on to your chairs. This is really something. Linda, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Whitley, and I agree that the importance of this subject now in 2014 going forward, I think we are going to hear more and more, and ultimately, I think this is finally getting close to a truth that the government of the United States has been trying to hide because I think they made some sort of an agreement with non-humans long ago around World War II. Whether it was a good or a bad, whether it was deceptive or in the end to help this earth, maybe remains to be seen, but I think there are so many question marks that are coming to me now from people who are whistleblowers, who have worked in the government, who know, and they are suggesting that there may have been an error in a decision long ago, and that part of all of the secrecy and confusion and schizophrenia around the subject of whether we are alone in this universe or not is related directly to the issue of human-alien hybrids on planet Earth, past, present, and future. And Whitley, it is highly probable that all life on Earth was seeded by an advanced intelligence from somewhere else in the cosmos. That idea was first proposed by 1903 Nobel Prize chemist Svante Arrhenius. He introduced the concept of panspermia, which is the seeding of life from the outside. His idea was spores of living cells concocted by some intelligence out there drifting through space and landing on planets. Then 70 years later, in 1973, Nobel Prize laureate Francis Crick evolved Arrhenius' concept to directed panspermia. After the discovery that DNA was a double helix molecule that contains the genetic code for literally all Earth life, from bacteria and fish to plants and humans, Crick was puzzled. Why would there be only one genetic code for all terrestrial Earth life? That could not have happened by chance, he hypothesized. So Crick agreed with Arrhenius that life on Earth was likely seeded in that DNA molecule and directed by advanced intelligences without defining them. Now, by 2014, government whistleblowers have for decades described extraterrestrial biological entities that have interacted with Earth for centuries. One man in the DIA told me they had proof of more than 270 million years of competing extraterrestrial civilizations terraforming and working on this planet. There has come increasing information, I would say just in the last year, that the main reason for ETs on Earth is to make humanoid clones and hybrids to perpetuate another civilization that is biologically in trouble. Some in the human abduction syndrome have suggested that the ETs that mutilate animals and abduct humans to collect sperm and ova are using a kind of slow motion invasion strategy in which humans will never know that they were replaced by alien hybrids. Human-alien hybrids living on Earth is the subject of an extraordinary nonfiction book first published in 2005 entitled Rachel's Eyes by Helen Luttrell and Jean Bilodeau. Jean, who I have known for many years, has been investigating animal mutilations, crop formations, and UFOs. Helen is the mother of a girl she calls Marissa in the book. All of the names in the book, except for Helen's and Jean's, have been adjusted. There are spelling variations. There are names changed to protect a lot of different people. So her daughter is called Marissa in the book, and Helen asked me if I would use Marissa, which is not her daughter's real name, for this broadcast. So Marissa was blinded by diabetes as a teenager, but more than anything, she wanted to go to college on her own. At age 20, in the spring of 1972, Marissa was accepted by American River College in Sacramento. I'm being allowed for the first time to give the real name of the real college. American River College is a community college founded in 1955. It's located in northeastern Sacramento, California. Currently, its enrollment is 35,000 full-time and part-time students, making it one of the largest community colleges in California. Helen Luttrell and Jean Bilodeau were able to get a January 10th, 2000 dated confirmation letter that a student named Rachel, spelled R-A-C-H-E-A-L, not the spelling in the book, with a first and last name provided by a colonel that they call Harry Nadine in the book. That is not his real name. The real last name has been protected. And in earthfiles.com, my news website, with Helen and Jean's permission, I have the original copy of the American River College of the letter. And the letter came from the Dean of Enrollment Services. And it says, quote, "This letter from the American River College in Sacramento is dated January 10, 2000. It was addressed to Jean and Helen to verify that they had a student, and they spell it R-A-C-H-E-A-L, the first letter of the last name. Helen asked me to black out, but the rest of the name is spelled A-D-I-E-N, and remembering that in the book, they call it Rachel Nadine and Colonel Harry Nadine. And this letter says, quote, "This is official verification that Rachel," blanked out first letter of the real actual name, A-D-I-E-N, did enroll with American River College in spring 1972. She was granted a leave of absence at that time. I hope this information is sufficient for your needs, signed by the Dean of Enrollment Services. And I am grateful because this is one of the first pieces of hard paper evidence that I have been able on this case to be able to present now publicly with Jean and Helen's support. And I think this is important because where we are headed in this story will sound like something out of Star Trek, but this is real. These are real people, even if the names were changed. We're talking about real events and real people. Now, what happened in the spring of 1972 is that Marissa got her apartment. She had been functioning as a person who was blind and she couldn't drive, but she was beginning to really, truly function on her own. And she does get this apartment. And her mom still has not been there yet, Helen Luttrell. This is very early in her getting into the apartment when a very unusual roommate shows up, referenced from the college. And with the young girl is Colonel Harry Nadine, as he is called in the book. And he goes to the apartment to talk with Marissa about the school recommending that she would be a very good and quiet roommate for the blind Marissa. Now, the colonel would eventually tell Helen and Marissa that he had worked since 1956 at a highly classified underground facility called Four Corners, many miles south of Ely, Nevada, which is a connection point en route to the northern edge of Area 51, Groom Lake, Nellis Air Force Base, Nevada, long associated with secretly housing a few live extraterrestrials and trying to back engineer extraterrestrial craft and technologies. This has nothing to do with the historic Four Corners where Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, and Arizona come together. This is in the Area 51 complex on the northern edge. And I have a very good map because it goes back to approximately the 70s that I have kept and made ink notes in. And I have put this at earthfiles.com because it is the clearest map that you can get your hands on today to look at this geography, because new maps are making certain that old information about that part of Nevada and the test site are eliminated. So the old maps actually have more information, and I have that map at earthfiles.com. Now, Colonel Nadine ended up telling Marissa and Helen Luttrell this astounding statement that he worked in what was called a, quote, humanization program, where extraterrestrial human hybrids were taught how to fit into modern human Earth society, underground at the northern edge of Area 51. Rachel, he told Helen Luttrell and her daughter, was one of the alien hybrids whose original prime civilization is allegedly on a planet that orbits the yellow sun, Zeta Reticuli 1, about 39 light years from Earth, in a binary star system in which both suns are very similar to Earth's yellow sun. And for those who have been listening to Dreamland and going to Earth Files for a long time, you will immediately think of the famous Betty and Barney Hill first publicly released abduction case in the early 1960s, because that is the one where Betty Hill, under hypnosis, drew a star map that she was exposed to by gray beings on some sort of craft, and that Marjorie Fish, an amateur astronomer, was able to take that information from Betty Hill's drawing and construct a three-dimensional segment of this part of the arm of the galaxy that we are in, the Milky Way galaxy, and was able to pinpoint other suns in our neighborhood, two of which are a binary system, Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2, approximately 39 light years from Earth. Now, Helen Luttrell told me that she herself was taken by Colonel Nadine to see the entrance to where Rachel was raised when she was transported to this planet, and that she saw the entrance to the Four Corners humanization program, and she said it was completely disguised on the surface as old falling down farm buildings and a barn. But those were the cover camouflage for a huge maze of underground tunnels and structures accessed through the innocent-looking farm buildings on the surface. When Colonel Nadine brought Rachel to American River College and then to Marissa's apartment, Helen was working as a teletype operator at McClellan Air Force Base in Sacramento. Through a military colleague there, Helen Luttrell was able to confirm that Colonel Nadine, with his real name, had a file at Mather Air Force Base not far from McClellan. Now, here to explain how Helen Luttrell first came forward about her extraordinary experience with her daughter Marissa and the ET human hybrid Rachel is writer and investigator Jean Bilodeau from Cedarville, California. And then, after Jean, we will follow with the amazing story of Helen Luttrell, Marissa, Rachel, and Colonel Nadine.
I had done a series of stories on UFO sightings in my locality. It was run in the paper for 2 weeks running, and in the 100-year history of the newspaper, the Modoc County Record, it was the only two issues in the history to sell completely out. So there was a great deal of interest. Helen read the stories and called me, and she wanted to tell me about her daughter, Marissa. Helen's daughter became blind in high school from complications from diabetes. Marissa's great goal in life was to graduate from college and help people. She was a very compassionate girl. She went to the college housing counselor and applied for housing off campus, but it couldn't be very expensive. They found her a place that was quiet within walking distance of the school, but with the stipulation that she couldn't make the rent on her own. She needed a roommate. And it wasn't long, just a day or two, this colonel and his daughter, Rachel, came into the housing office and applied for housing for the daughter. Rachel had to have a special diet. And Marissa said, well, I have to have a special diet, too. I'm diabetic. And they reached an agreement and became roommates. Marissa began to notice that Rachel pronounced each word very distinctly and almost in a monotone, a mechanical-sounding monotone. Rachel did say she had been raised on a military base, and there were no kids to play with, and so she didn't know all these things and didn't have anybody to go out on a date with. She did notice that Rachel was a bit clumsy and that the special food that Rachel ate was always delivered in containers.
Anything that would identify the source?
She did not. What she did discover, though, on good days she could see light and dark, and she could, with a strong magnifying glass, kind of make out things. She wanted to know, what is this green stuff that Rachel brings? Before Rachel would eat it, she would freeze it. And Marissa went in one day when Rachel wasn't home and took a box out and examined it very carefully. And then she found a little red triangle with three black horizontal lines toward the base of it. She also noticed that Rachel always wore a scarf and wraparound sunglasses and long-sleeve shirts, even inside.
In spring of 1972, Helen Luttrell, then 40 years old, left her teletype work at McClellan Air Force Base in Sacramento for her first visit to her daughter Marissa, then 20 years old, and blind from diabetes since her teens. Marissa's new apartment was within walking distance of American River College. Helen had not yet met Colonel Nadine, the so-called father of the new roommate, Rachel. But Helen knew he was supposed to be based out of Mather Air Force Base, also in Sacramento. That's the day Helen discovered what was behind Rachel's sunglasses.
I had stopped by to see how Marissa was doing, and standing in the open doorway, because it was hot, I said, I wish I could meet Rachel. She sounds interesting. And just at that time, I heard someone coming up the stairs to the apartment on the second floor. Marissa said, wait a minute, I think that is her. And she sort of just rushed in past us, but I could see she was very different. She'd forgotten something that she needed for the class, so she got it. And when she came back out, I guess she tripped on a rug or something. I don't know, but she was going to fall face forward, it looked like. There was no way that she was reaching out to break her fall, and I thought that was strange because usually, even if you have things in your arms, you still reach out and you try to save yourself. She was going to fall right between us. So I reached out and grabbed her arm, and she was wearing a long-sleeved jumpsuit, and she had a bandana tied around her head down under her chin, and she had big black sunglasses on. I grabbed her arm to save her and kind of stood her back up, but as I did that, the sleeve to the jumpsuit flipped up, and I found myself hanging onto her arm, and it did not feel at all like real skin. It was really cool, which was unusual because it was such a hot evening.
And the strange, cool, mushroom-like feeling of her skin and that you were not feeling bone?
I didn't. You would have felt the bone that comes right down into your wrist bone.
Mm-hmm.
That was where I touched her. I should have felt a bone. It felt spongy.
Hmm.
Didn't feel firm like it should have. And as I stood her up, I'm still hanging onto her arm, and I'm looking right into her eyes.
Because her glasses fell?
Yep, they slipped down. They didn't fall off, but they slipped down on her nose. And I could see huge green eyes with vertical black slits.
And the color of that green?
Was avocado green, inside of an avocado.
Were there any whites to the eye?
None.
So you're looking at solid avocado green with a vertical black slit?
Yes.
So this would be closest to, would it be a reptile snake?
I guess it could be. I didn't think of it as that. I thought of it as a cat's eye.
Okay, what's the difference to you between a cat's eye and a snake eye?
I'm definitely afraid of reptiles. I love cats.
Well, usually a cat's vertical pupil might be a little wider than a snake's vertical pupil.
Oh, yes. It was not a wide slit. It was fairly narrow and deep black.
Deep black in the avocado green, like near the pit of an avocado.
Yes, yes.
She would have to have something that would support the body. We know insects have an exoskeleton, whereas we and other animals have interior skeletons that prop us up.
Right. I thought she was attractive, but a drawing I have made in my book, she is not pretty. She had kind of orangish hair, not really very thick, but it was curly a little bit. Her eyes were awfully big.
So you may have had your mind affected by something that Rachel was doing to make her appear a certain way to you even then.
It's very possible she may have projected into my mind an image of a person that was attractive.
What about photographs? Did you or Marissa ever take photographs of Rachel?
No, and we should have. I don't know why we didn't.
What happened at that second when Rachel knows that you are looking at her eyes that she has been working so hard to keep covered with those glasses?
Well, for just a moment, I was really terrified because I had never seen anything like that. Then I could see that there was fear in her eyes. She was afraid because she knew that I knew she was not who she was made out to be.
Meaning that she was not human.
Yes.
So what happens next?
Well, I stood her up, and Marissa introduced us, and Rachel said, and she spoke in a real monotone, no inflection. It was, "I am very pleased to meet you." And I said, "Well, I'm pleased to meet you too, Rachel." And then she said, "I must go." And she hurried on down the stairs. So then I told Marissa, "I have to go too." And we just didn't discuss that incident. There's a lot of things like that that I think about after all these years. Well, we should have stood there and talked about that.
Well, now, what was the next interaction that you had with Marissa and Rachel?
Let's see. I think the next one was when we had a meeting, because obviously she told the colonel, her father, what had happened. And so he asked to have a meeting with me and Marissa, and he would give us some information about Rachel. And so we set up this appointment for one afternoon in the apartment. And we all sat there, and he started to talk about where she came from and a little bit about his background. And then all of a sudden, I don't remember hearing him talk, but all this information was in my mind.
So verbally, in the room, to you and Marissa, that's as far as you remember him speaking verbally, and after that, it was a telepathic download.
Right.
And this is coming from the Colonel Nadine. That day, did he say to you and to Marissa that he was in charge of humanization?
He was involved in that project at Four Corners.
Can you give some detail on how Colonel Nadine introduced to you and Marissa this humanization program, and what did he say about it?
Well, he gave the details of how she arrived there and how they had brought her up on the base. It was a project to see how well beings from another place could be integrated into our society. It was also an interspecies breeding program on another planet.
What does that mean?
Well, that would be a breeding program where they would probably take ovum from a human female and intermingle it with the beings on another planet.
Well, where did Rachel come from?
Zeta Reticuli.
Zeta Reticuli? Did the colonel go into details about what was known about Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2?
Yes. He didn't go into the details.
But he said Zeta Reticuli was the home planet of Rachel's species?
Yes.
How did Rachel get to Earth?
She came in a ship that apparently had been making trips to Four Corners, and it brought geneticists and other scientists from Zeta Reticuli to work in conjunction with our scientists who were working underground at Four Corners.
Do you remember Colonel Nadine telling you details about why the United States government would be working with extraterrestrial biological entities from Zeta Reticuli on this planet, doing a humanization program, helping the extraterrestrials have an underground territory to raise hybrids?
He told me that the exchange scientists from Zeta Reticuli were using the underground facilities at Four Corners to help teach some of our foremost scientists and physicians about the use of artificial blood and possibilities of transplants of organs like fingers and eyes and organs that had never been transplanted before.
If Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2 scientists have the ability to extend life and make new organs and clone bodies, why would they need Earth?
I never could figure that out, except that there must have been, as you said before, some sort of a treaty where there was some exchange, but I don't know what the incentive would have been to us, except knowledge.
Did Colonel Nadine talk to you specifically about animal mutilations and human abductions?
That there was an agreement that humans could be abducted, but that was supposed to have been stopped by a certain time, but it never did get stopped.
Which means that the non-humans, wherever their real source is, are not telling the truth to the government.
Well, I believe that.
Did Colonel Nadine give you some explanation about why that civilization from Zeta Reticuli needed to mutilate animals and abduct humans.
He didn't. It's as if I were programmed to just accept what was told to me and don't ask any questions.
What did he tell you about his relationship with Rachel, how it started and what happened?
Well, at Four Corners, when he was first assigned there, he was on what was called the Blue Team, the crew that went out whenever there was a ship coming in, and if they were in trouble, his team would go out and try to recover any occupants that they could or put out the fire or whatever they could do. And this one particular one that they went out to investigate, they saw that it was going to crash. And so they stood by, and Rachel was thrown out, I believe, in a part of it when it crashed. And then he could see a little movement in it, and so he got her out. And she only had some minor burns, I believe, on her arms. And by the time he got her out, they were beginning to heal themselves up. She was going to be a survivor, so he took her back to the base medical facility, which was also underground, and there were female nurses. She could talk a little understandable language. And he just, right from the very first, when he saw her still in that burning piece of craft, he felt a bond with her.
Telepathically.
Yes, he had this bond, and he had never had it with anybody before.
So he feels compassion and emotion for this extraterrestrial biological creature that he has taken out of this crash. And the crash was near?
It was near Four Corners.
Four Corners area was set up with the underground installation specifically for extraterrestrials from Zeta Reticuli to be working on hybridization and having a base on Earth.
Right.
Did Colonel Nadine ever say anything about what the chronological age of Rachel was?
Well, they didn't know, but they had asked her if she knew how old she was. And she told them that where she came from, they didn't have a concept of age in years. It was just how you were, was what she said. But they figured she was probably around 14. They already had that one scientist, Chisky, help in formulating something for her to eat and drink. He didn't even know.
He was in charge of food for Rachel. What would that be?
Well, I think it was the same thing that she ate exclusively when the girls lived together. I did not see it, but my daughter did, and although she was technically blind, her sight fluctuated a lot, as it does with diabetes. She saw what looked like warmed over frozen spinach. She said it was awful looking. But yet she wanted a taste of it, and Rachel wouldn't let her. She said it wouldn't be good for her. But Rachel had to eat nothing but that, and she also could drink nothing but a special liquid.
This ties into this issue of information over the years has been at least some of the extraterrestrials have a fluid in their body that is chlorophyll and not like our blood.
And that sort of goes back to when the colonel rescued her out of that burning piece of craft, because he could see that she had cuts on her arms. But as he pulled her out to safety, then he could see that those were beginning to heal. But the little blood that was on the outside was very pale. Blood has a thicker consistency to it. But this was like what you would call a serum. And it was pale pink. Not chlorophyll, but it was not blood either.
The scientist Chisky, what kind of scientist was he?
Well, he was a geneticist. He was in charge of the interspecies breeding program.
Interspecies breeding program?
Yes.
Why would the United States be participating with extraterrestrials on an interspecies breeding program?
Well, I don't really have a good answer for that, except to say that I think they are continuing to do it. They've done it for years and years. And our government is never going to tell us. They're never going to admit to this.
But why are they doing it in the first place?
I think because they need to know how to fabricate some beings that can travel back and forth safely between the different planets.
What happened to Rachel and Marissa living together?
Well, they got along really well. And they were very close friends. At the very end, It was after I had discovered she wasn't from here. My daughter came home for lunch one day. Usually Rachel was there, but this one day she wasn't. And my daughter had looked in the bedroom or felt around in Rachel's bedroom, and everything was gone. My daughter was really upset. And she sat down on the bed. She looked around, and then she saw something attached to the mirror on the dresser. And she went over and took it off, and what it said was, "You have been a very good friend, Marissa, and I will miss you very much. I have left you a gift." And then my daughter realized that she had read the note, and she was legally blind, but she could read that. And she realized that the gift that Rachel had left her was the gift of sight.
Amazing.
And then she called me at work and told me what had happened. She didn't know what to do. She was really beside herself. So I said, well, I have this friend, Bill, in security, and he'd been a friend for quite a long time, and he owed me a couple of favors. So I thought, well, I'll call him and see if he can find out anything where the colonel is, and that'll give me a clue for Rachel. Actually, he is the one that had verified that the colonel and Rachel had really come from Four Corners in the beginning, and that I would be able to find out nothing more. It was really, really top secret. So I told him what had happened, that Rachel disappeared to check the master base and see where the colonel is. And so he checked, and he called me back in just a few minutes. Those records have been pulled. There's nothing to be found. He's gone.
So Colonel Nadine disappeared at exactly the same time that Rachel disappeared from Marissa's apartment, but Rachel left Marissa the gift of sight.
Right, and it wasn't full sight. And it fluctuated, but it was just a lot better. It was a wonderful gift.
Now, what happened to Rachel?
Well, ultimately, I was abducted sometime after that, and I was shown some of her, what I call, handlers. They were government people. They eliminated her.
How many extraterrestrial human hybrids now live on the surface of this planet, let alone underground?
I certainly don't want to think about being replaced, but I don't know, and that's part of the problem, too. Nobody knows the real answer, because we're not sure that we can trust the extraterrestrials.
And there, Whitley, is perhaps the rub.
I had done a series of stories.
And that, Whitley, is perhaps the rub of the last 60 years of humans in the FDR, Truman, and Eisenhower administrations being presented with the dilemma, do they introduce extraterrestrials to the planet before they understand who they are, why they're here, what the agenda is, or do they do a very secret treaty with the idea that they would get advanced technologies that were clearly moving people through space in some way that our government would not have understood in the FDR and World War II years. And our leaders wanted that technology, and so they thought that it was justified to do a treaty in which, yes, a few animals and, yes, a few humans could be used by the extraterrestrials for research, because the ETs had convinced them that they were in some sort of a biological problem and this would help them. And over time, we get to this complex hall of mirrors with a quicksand floor, and Colonel Nadine disappeared at exactly the same time that Rachel disappeared from the apartment, and Helen Luttrell is convinced that Rachel was, the term eliminated, it could have meant that she was also taken back to Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2 as opposed to being killed. We will never know, I'm sure. Marissa, the daughter, ended up happily married, but suddenly at a holiday party on December 7th, 1990, she was laughing. She was with her husband in a Christmas holiday party and dropped to the floor dead.
My God, Linda, what a story. What a story. Rachel's eyes, what strange, strange things happen in the shadows of this world of ours. When Linda and I go on in the subscriber area, we're going to be talking more about the genetic issues that are involved, why this might be happening, who might be doing it, and I'm going to tell a few stories of close encounters with hybrids. I've had quite a few that I have not told before, and you're going to be, I think, amazed that this is real. It's happening. I don't know how or why, but it's happening. Linda, thank you so much for being with us on Dreamland. And subscribers, do not miss what's coming up next. It is gonna be worth your time. And you're not a subscriber, it is really time.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and our family of subscribers. Our news editor is Ann Streber. Our science reporter is Linda Moulton Howe. Our webmaster is Daniel Stiegel. And I'm your Dreamland announcer, Brian Arnold. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.